Hi, it's Helen with Paper Talk, and I'm here in Portland, Oregon at Oblation Papers and Press with Ron and Jennifer Rich. Hi, guys.
Hello.
So you guys have been at this for a while. Did you meet in college, or where did you meet?
We met in Vancouver, B.C. at a graduate school of theology.
Uh-huh.
Regent College.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how did you guys get interested in paper?
Well, we got married shortly after and went on a honeymoon to the Oregon coast, where we had a month-long honeymoon and a book on making paper in a blender. So we started gathering sea pods and grasses, throwing them in the blender, making a really rough, organic, gnarly kind of paper that we spread out all over the place.
Do you know what book that was?
Paper Pleasures by Faith Shannon.
Oh yeah, that was one of the first books I
can remember. Yeah, that. Yeah. I don't remember that at all.
It's come up a couple times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so she was really inspiring.
Uh-huh.
And then we took all that paper, you know, and started selling it at the Eugene Saturday Market.
Okay.
Ron built a little booth, and we went there every Saturday, and it's a really really supportive environment to start a small sort of crafts business.
Mm-hmm. So how were you making paper at that time?
We I built some primitive molds and deckles,
mm-hmm.
and then we were just recycling paper, and we recycled that for a long time. I think using a series of blenders,
uh-huh.
and I think we were just recycling paper for a while, and then we were going to frame shops and gathering mat board. And then sorting mat board into different colors.
Right. Recycled cotton content, archival.
And they seemed to have plenty of it, and we did that for a while.
So it was all blank cards.
It was all blank cards. Yeah, that's right. We didn't print anything at that time.
Uh-huh.
And I think shortly after that, we had read an article in, I think it was in Daniel Smith's publication.
Oh.
Yeah, in his catalog, because he had those artist features and things of that sort. And we read an article about one of the French paper mills that made floral paper.
Moulin de la Roque.
Yeah, Moulin de la Roque. And we decided we'd like to do the same thing, and it actually became kind of popular. There were a lot of people making floral inclusion papers at that time, And we actually took a little trip there. I think we took a bike trip.
In France.
In France, uh-huh. To visit the mill. And we had been doing it for some time at that point. And we were living on Vashon Island, Washington. And we were growing some of our own flowers, spatulas, buttons, and ferns. That things of that sort. I built a greenhouse where we grew our ferns in, and we were floral inclusion paper makers for about 10 years.
Not just flowers, but there were lots of potato bugs and slugs in that studio, as I recall.
Yeah, there were some natural elements.
Natural elements that made their way into the paper from time to time.
So were you still using blenders, or had you...
No, I built a small beater at that point. Done enough sort of figuring out how things are supposed to work, and I built a kind of a primitive beater.
The Canadian red sled beater.
So do you have experience building things? Or
building things I'm pre-programmed for that.
Okay,
Some genetic, you know, thing in my past told me.
And so you looked at beaters elsewhere, and you
drawings
and
I got a set of drawings, and I went to a few conferences. And,
right.
I mean, it wasn't probably a beater that you could process fabric with, but
uh-huh.
we could. We were buying at that point in time.
Cotton linters?
Probably cotton linter, and we were also buying manila hemp. We were buying abaca,
uh-huh.
For a long time, and we had this
combo
deal.
Right, it was a mix.
We had a really great source. I don't know, some guy in Toronto would buy it from the Philippines, and then he'd smuggle it across the border, and we'd have to make arrangements to get it picked up in New York, and I think he could do it without I don't know, tariffs or taxes or something. Right. He figured out some way to sell us abaca, right, you know, in the black market.
The secret's out. All right.
Yeah.
And so you were still just making plain paper. So how did the letterpress printing come about?
Well, so a couple of people approached us about printing wedding invitations on our paper. And it was actually on my birthday. Oh. I think it was 1993. We bought our first beater for a couple hundred bucks.
Letterpress.
Right. And brought it in and... You know, we had bought some type, and we're learning how to handset type. Basically, we learned from a book, type manual from the 1940s on letterpress.
Uh-huh.
And so we kind of gathered everything we needed, and we tried to print a Christmas card. Was our first project on this kind of really gnarly, thick, rough paper.
Uh-huh.
And we had the type, and we had the leads, and we had... the composing stick and the chase and everything. The only thing that we hadn't thought about is the little M spaces between and the little spacing between the letters and the words. And so Ron had to mill those out of wood in order for us to print this little card at the last minute for Christmas. Right. But that was our first project, and it got a little easier from there.
right.
Yeah, but those folks at Tabula Rasa in Seattle, they were kind of inspiring. There was an older couple who were letterpress printers. Mm-hmm. And we made their acquaintance because they had a storefront at the 5th Street, at the Pike Place Market. Mm-hmm. And they sold antiquarian books, and they sold other things that were related to paper ephemera. And
John and Giselle.
Yeah, and so they were really, lovely people, and they... And they were taking our paper and printing on it, and that was kind of the sort of light bulb went off, like, well, we could probably do this ourselves.
Right. And so how did you go from, so you were in Eugene doing the market, and then
it was just for
Vashon, that's kind of remote. How were you selling your wares?
Well, at first it was more of a cottage industry where we were... Well, after the Saturday market, we started doing arts and crafts fairs around the West. So up and down the West Coast and over to, you know, Idaho and Wyoming. And then we started wholesaling out of our shop, and we started, you know, FedEx would come every day and pick it up and take it to some accounts.
We went to the stationery show, too.
In New York.
Shortly after that.
Yeah. And, yeah, we've been doing that for about 27 years now. But we had a couple of people working at our house, and we would make them lunch every day, and they would come and, you know, make paper and do some printing. Eventually, after I was printing my daughter's birth announcement the day before I had her, but the next day I wasn't able to go to the print shop because I had a new baby.
Right.
So we had somebody take over at that point. And it just kind of grew from, you know, arts and crafts to cottage industry there, and then we moved down to Portland in 1998 and opened a retail store with a view onto the letterpress and paper making processes. So that was Oblation Papers and Press. And
so did you ever like have that vision like as an end goal to have a stationery store?
No, we didn't. Even after we opened it, we were surprised that we were in retail. What? This is retail?
Right.
We just wanted to have a place to sort of, I don't know, show our papers to brides that didn't have to slug through the mud and potato bags, and also gather other beautiful papers from around the world and just have a place where we could, you know, we kind of knew there were really amazing papers in Italy and Japan and Czech Republic, and we wanted to bring them all into one place and offer them to people. And honestly, retail was not in the forefront of our mind, but there was this aha moment that, wait a minute, are we in retail? Yeah.
Right, and that's when I met you guys.
Right.
So I know you... you have had your papers in these, what are those books called?
Portfolios
in other stores. Do you still do that? And when did you start that? Was that when you were before the retail store?
That was probably the
when
first
you did the stationery
show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we started out, we had a really, you know,
small album with floral papers in it.
Yeah.
And we did that for a while, and then we a couple of editions of papers with just flowers in it.
Uh-huh.
And then
printing. Just with printing.
With printing, yeah. And then we, you know, and that was a good ride.
Yeah.
And then we felt the market kind of shift to things that are more modern and less organic. And we decided that we would put aside the flower paper, you know, flow paper making, and try something, try redesigning what we do. And so we've put up a couple editions of work out that are pretty much wedding related products and social stationery products in albums.
Mm-hmm.
And we are currently designing, I guess, maybe a fifth or sixth album or something like that. It's kind of a long process. They take about, it seems like it take about 2 years. And then we'll introduce that.
So you don't have one every year for the stationery show?
No.
You kind of can ride for a couple of years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're kind of big projects.
Yeah. And how many of those do you produce?
We have produced editions of around 100.
Yeah.
But the market is definitely slimming.
Yeah.
You know, people who have been doing this for a while retiring, and mm-hmm. not a lot of stationery stores. Yeah. It's
passing.
Not as necessary as it used to be. So we're planning on producing an edition of maybe 50 books this time around.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And complementing that with, you know, an online offering as well. So.
Yeah.
Right.
The market's changing, but I think, you know,
Amazon's probably going to buy us any day now.
I hope not.
Wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah. Now papers definitely had a changing position in the marketplace, but it's coming around too. It's the, you know, I think people find it more rare and more, a little bit more precious now when you get something, you know, that's real and tangible, and it's not like a disappearing email.
Right. Mm-hmm. So tell me about one really interesting project that came here through the store that you produced.
Well, right now we're working on an interesting job for the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Uh-huh.
So they came to us and were interested in... we did another project with them that was sort of a temporary exhibit. It was based on artwork in their temporary exhibit. And so that was... a project that lasted only a few months, but now they wanted us to take, for example, a three-dimensional San Martino sculpture, an Italian sculpture, and turn it into three-color letterpress. So it was taking round 3D object and making it into sort of flat planes of letterpress. And so we ended up moving that into sort of, you know, a pale rose and a darker blush tones in the robe and the face of this San Martino angel figure. And then Ron ended up tracing some of the outlines of the angel, and we transferred that into a gold foil piece to print onto the top of the two pink tones. And so
is it a card? What is the...
It's a two... they wanted two Christmas cards, two holiday
Christmas
cards.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
Oh, cool.
So
yeah.
It's a box note. And so there was that, and then there was another piece that was sort of blue and brown and more earthy. But yeah, it's a sort of... they're sort of companion pieces.
And so, like, how many do they order?
1,500 boxes of each.
1,500 boxes.
Yeah, so that's...
and how many in a box? Five?
Six.
Six.
Yeah. So that's a large order for us.
Yeah.
It's our largest order.
And it's on handmade paper?
It's not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's on commercial paper.
Yeah, it's on commercial paper. Cotton paper.
Right.
But they need it in a month. And the design work isn't quite ironed out yet. We're getting really close.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be a push, but it's exciting to be part of the Met. And, you know, it's nice to work with museums. We've been doing that a little bit more and more. Mm-hmm. It's a nice customer base.
Mm-hmm.
Fun, and it's a real honor to be included in what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so let's just talk about your papermaking operation a little bit. So... Ron, I know you're just really innovative in from the floor to the...
Yeah.
There's a pump for stirring the
there
bag.
There has been, yeah.
Tell me what you've got in there now.
Sure.
You maybe hear the water dripping.
Well, we have, I think, Most recently, we discovered, I mean, it took us a while to figure this out, but shallow vats aren't really a terrible way to go. I mean, we had really deep vats for a long time, and that seemed kind of useful. But now they're, I don't know, we operate in maybe 15 inches of water or something like that. So we've got some shallow troughs from the local farm supply store. And then I built a kind of a matrix that was for agitating the pulp using a compressor and a foot operated switch. We did that for a long time, and it just seemed like you agitate pulp, you know, just a 3-step process. Two steps is agitating pulp, one step is forming the sheath. Like, there's a lot of agitation time that goes into, you know, sheet formation, and so we ran the, you know, the operation like that for a long time. But our current paper maker, who's been with us for about 10 years, he thinks he can just, you know, he's Stir kind it. Of innovated on his own, and uh-huh. he kind of clips right on through without using that.
Okay.
So we've put aside the compressor and the sort of agitation process.
And so one thing also, I think you're pretty conscious about your employees' health or physical, you know, papermaking is hard.
Yeah.
And I remember from years ago,
mm-hmm.
you had several papermakers and you would alternate. And, I mean, I think you're very conscious about, I mean, that probably
mm-hmm.
instigated hogging the vat and,
exactly.
and getting efficient in making paper.
Yeah, trying to exert as little energy as possible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so after a while, so I think that really people were dipping, you know, deep vats, and the water was at the bottom. People were dipping down deep and having a lot of sort of back related.
Right.
I mean, I haven't had really any injuries, but we had a lot more extension involved uh-huh. in the process, and we fabricated some stands that brought the bats up a little higher,
mm-hmm.
and little more, you know, high waist kind of.
We can lean on it.
Yeah. And then our papermakers developed some, you know, real simple techniques for just cooching the paper, where the task isn't too demanding, and mm-hmm. we don't pull very large sheets. The largest sheet is 18 by 30. So it's
okay.
not terribly large and not terribly heavy.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got a lot of deckles to divide the paper up in different sizes. Mm-hmm. I think I learned that from you. I think the expanded mm-hmm. PVC was mm-hmm. something you started using, and I think I borrowed that from you years ago. And then we ended up having that cut up. I was making all those deckles, and that stuff's just a real mess to cut.
Yeah.
And now they fabricate them for me, and we send them a file, and that's really great. They knock them out. And
do you use that as an entire deckel, or do you somehow attach it to a regular deckel?
It's the deckel proper, and then it's got a lip around the perimeter,
uh-huh.
so that holds it into place.
Okay.
Sometimes Colin, our paper maker, will put a little, he'll put them under pressure to sort of stretch them, so they, you know, a little center pressure to keep a little tension on them, so they bow out a little bit, and he can grab them and, you know, create a little more vacuum or, you know, in the process.
And are your molds historic, new? Where are your molds from?
Recent batches of molds were made by Lee Scott McDonald.
Okay.
Probably 15 years ago. And they've taken a real beating.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they've held up. We've put them back together again. I've got a few I made in there. I don't think we're using those right now. Those were years ago, but I think we're using principally two that Lee Scott McDonald had made.
Uh-huh.
For everything.
And how many sheets of paper do you make in a week or a month? Or?
Yeah, so daily it's a two seven pound loads,
mm-hmm.
and because we've got a 7 pound beater, and that yields for us roughly 75 cooches.
Okay.
And so the task daily is about 75 cooches. That's about 6 hours worth of work, and then 2 hours is roughly pulling paper, putting paper away from the previous day.
Right.
So 5 days of work. Sometimes, you know, yesterday was tearing apart a motor and greasing the bearings and putting it back together again. But mostly it's production,
mm-hmm.
production paper making about 8 hours a day, where 6 hours is roughly paper making.
Wow. Yeah. So that's pretty impressive. And then, just talk about how things move through the shop then. So you have printers and then assemblers. Mm-hmm, and
Yeah, everything is pretty much made to order. Right. So there's a job file, and if it's customer based, then the job file will start in the office with the order and proofing and things of that sort, and then it'll move for a work order for the paper maker, and then a work order for the printers. It'll go into a job box, end up in the printing studio, and then it ends up on a shelf for finishing. There'll be a kind of a finishing department that goes through it, packages it, and ships it. It sounds rather efficient, but it's rather archaic. I mean, we have more dry erase boards and, you know, cork boards than probably anybody in a small manufacturing business. Yeah, one day we'll do something a little more, I don't know.
Yeah.
Digital. For the time being, it kind of works. There's a lot of paper involved, let's just say that.
And then what about the products that you develop? And you have several products in your shop, and I guess you wholesale some of those.
Yeah, so we have a design team that meets twice a week, and there's five of us on the team, and we sort of all have different products that we're responsible for, and we bring to the table, and we offer a corrective criticism and constructive criticism, and try to make the products better, and then, you know, eventually we'll push go and send them to the print shop or send them to get film. So we design everything digitally and then send it off to get film, and then we take the film into our polymer plate maker, make plates, and that ends up on the press, and we letterpress print it with either the Heidelberg or the CMP printers letterpress.
How many presses do you have? Five or six?
We just got rid of two.
Yeah, so 1, 2, 3, 4. We have four in the shop.
Four presses.
And how many printers are operating?
Two right now.
And so what are some of the new designs?
So we just produced a letter writing kit and a small selection of letter writing sheets, which we find primarily we produce greeting cards and then journals and coasters and a few other paper goods. But we're finding that it's a little bit hard to find letter writing sheets in the marketplace, and so we're kind of printing some gold foil, rose gold foil, and matte silver foil, small designs on the sheets and on the envelopes. And so that's been going well. And then Ron's responsible for the Hat, Wig, and Glove Company. That's a large best-selling line in our product lineup, where it's sort of quirky sayings like, I recommend vodka, and children will ruin your life.
So that's your... That's part of you.
That's my little project, yeah. Okay. Get a little help on it along the way.
I remember seeing those cards, but I don't know if Hat, Wig, and Glove was connected. When did that come about?
I don't know. Two years ago?
I saw some witty cards, and then today I saw that whole...
There's a whole wall of them.
That's awesome.
Thanks. I don't know, maybe 5 years ago. I wasn't sure if they were kind of print-worthy, but... I let a few out of the drawer, and they ended up doing all right.
People love them.
Yeah, it's been kind of a fun project.
Cool.
So we market our cards and paper goods at three New York shows a year, the gift shows, and then we've done the stationery show for like 27 years. And also we've done some international shows, so Tokyo and London and Paris, and that's been fun. We get to kind of travel and...
Yeah,
we got a grant for that. But,
We like to travel and see what the letterpress market actually is not very strong in other places in the United States. So, while eight or 9 years ago, it feels like letterpress really took off in this country and people are. Understand it and demand it. It's very very fledgling still in Europe and in Asia. So,
but you have some accounts over there.
We do have some accounts, and there's a few other companies working in that media, but it's definitely a place that can grow. And meanwhile, they have many of their own traditions that we're learning from, and it's a nice back and forth with the artisans over there.
Right. Well, and so how many years have you guys been in business? It's been,
I guess, 27.
27. Yeah, congratulations.
We're getting close.
Really amazing. Thanks. Yeah,
still
I know.
Going strong.
It's
yeah.
funny. It seems funny.
Yeah. It surprises us, too.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. I accidentally ended up selling greeting cards my whole life. I don't entirely know how that happened, but that's you know, that's the story they'll tell about me.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. And is there anything else? Is your daughter working here?
Yeah. Uh huh. Both daughters are working here for the summer.
Are they going to take the business over?
I don't think so. No, they're
their own plans.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But in the meantime, it'll help you pay for college up there.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's nice to have them around in the summer, and you know they like to do production and put cards in sleeves by the piece or work in retail, and we all kind of come down together. And
mm-hmm. Well, anything else we should know about Oblation Papers? Well, this sounds good. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Helen.
Best of luck.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah.